If you want to get stuff done, then you have come to the right place. This is the Get Stuff Done podcast, brought to you in association with RDI Worldwide, a weekly interview series with prominent and diverse people from around the world who will share their own unique insights on what it takes to get stuff done and their personal strategies for doing so. My name is Gordon Dudley, the creator of the Get Stuff Done project and host of this podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. We hope you enjoy this episode and would love to hear your feedback anytime. Let's get stuff done. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Get Stuff Done podcast. Today, I'm joined by Chance Kennedy, somebody who I first had the pleasure of meeting in Seoul back in 2010 when we were able to do our Yonsei Global MBA together. But one degree is not enough for this man. He is, in fact, has in total five separate degrees, which I will like to hear a little bit about. And more than that, he is currently a staff product manager at Walmart on the west coast of the US, where he is originally from in America. But he has also worked previously for Amazon and also Expeditors. And before coming over to Korea, he also had some time working for the armed forces. So he has a very diverse career, and I think he has a lot of interesting insights to share with us today, especially around my favorite topic of getting stuff done, the name of the podcast. So Chance, thanks so much for being a guest today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And I want to delve right into why I thought that you would be a good guest to come on today, because I specifically remember when we met in Seoul back in 2010, that the subject of our MBA that seemed to most excite you was management science.
Yeah, love that
yeah?
stuff.
Absolutely.
Loved it.
Now, it was totally new to me. After I was also quite interested in the subject, and it was so clear that you were really like excited about getting into what really can move a business through yeah. better analytics and examination of and what a key factor. And I think, yeah. correct me if I'm wrong, that you have translated that into your career.
Yeah, very much so. I don't want to say in a roundabout way. It's not that I'm using exactly, you know, the tools that we learned in management science and via Excel and add-ins there and whatnot. But really, those courses, and especially management science, opened my eyes to how we can actually use data in different ways to tweeze apart the inner workings of a business and figure out what you need to do to move forward in the future. And as a product manager in the tech sphere, you know, that's a constant. As I went into my career, I actually started learning SQL after that. That kind of, you know, the management science stuff, I really started learning about VBA. And then that brought me into SQL, which is a language you can use to really evaluate data and make it malleable, I guess is mm-hmm. the best way I can say it, and to gain an understanding of what's going on overall and make business decisions. So, yeah.
Okay. But let me loop back to what I mentioned in the intro, which is that you have five degrees, which definitely
yeah.
puts you into you know, highly educated. There's no doubt about it. How did you come to be the graduated five times?
Yeah. I was not smart. No, you know, it all just kind of happened.
Not determined. I mean, it takes determination to finish 5 degrees.
You know, the thing is like I always did the things that I wanted to do, and that's what really brought it about. So, you know, bringing up my time in the armed forces, I served for 6 years in the U.S. Army, in the regular U.S. Army, and a year in the Washington National Guard after that, after getting out. And when I was kind of coming into those final few years of my military service, I was already thinking about what I wanted to do after my military service. And I really fell in love with just electronic music and things of that nature while I was in the Army. And I made a decision that I actually wanted to study electronic music production when I got out of the Army. And so I moved here to the Seattle area, found a program here, and I went to school for electronic music production. And it turned out that there were just a few more credits and I could get another degree for digital audio engineering. And so music production is basically making the music, you program it, different things like that, whereas the recording is recording sound and doing what we're doing now, or recording audio for film and cutting it all together and making an album, commercials and things of that nature. So it's like, all right, well, I might as well do both degrees at the same time. So that brought me my first two degrees. And
Two in the
then
bag.
two in the bag. And then my BA counselor at the school was like, hey, did you know you can get another degree for like 6 more credits? And I was like, oh, well, why don't I do that degree too? So I got just like a general transfer degree. And then it
Three in
served
the
in
bag.
student government, 3 in the bag. And it served in student government and things like that. And some of my other officers in student government had actually gotten some scholarships a year prior to when I was graduating with my last degree. And I was like, well, I'm going to apply for that scholarship. And I ended up getting a 2-year full tuition paid scholarship to any school in the state of Washington. So I needed something else to study. And I was like, you know what? I'd started studying Korean when I lived in Korea in the army. I'd love to finish that up. So I went to the University of Washington for a bachelor's degree in Korean language and literature. That took me back over to Korea for a study abroad program. And then I graduated in 2008 from that. And, you know, it was the height of the financial crisis, right? And it was really hard to find employment as somebody with music degrees and a degree in language. And so I decided to go do my MBA there in Korea and at Yonsei University. And it was a really good move, I believe, in terms of the work environment and the lack of jobs at the time, given the financial crisis. And it was allowed me to go and, you know, better myself educationally and really gain that business side of education that I'd been lacking up to that point. And of course, I met you and everybody else we went to school with, and fantastic experience. But after that, I was like, you know what, I got to go to work at this point. I think that's enough. And as much as I love learning, and so I went to work after that.
So now I've got obviously tons of stuff that I want to tap into now, and so I'm sure we're going to run out of time today. But first of all, the electronic music side and music production, are you
Sure.
still doing that? Is that still a part of your life?
You know, it's fallen actually by the wayside a bit. And a few reasons for that, actually. The getting into my career, I really was still doing a lot of music and things like that. But once I got a family and it kind of moved on to some other things, my time was very, very limited, right? There's positives to that and downsides to that in terms of it was a really good creative outlet for me. That come to really realize in the past really 6 months that that was something that was very beneficial for me overall. And but I've kind of started also tuning those artistic sides of me into actually standing up my own business for AI generated art, experience inspired AI generated art called Mindful Muse. So I've got the website set up and whatnot, just getting all the art loaded up there, and hopefully in the next month or so we'll have that up and running for to provide people with that art. So.
I would love to be able to share that when that comes out. You said Mindful Muse.
Mindful Muse is what it will be,
AI.
yes. Yep.
Fantastic. And the Korean side of things, you came to the MBA already speaking Korean, which
Some, yep.
was more than most of the other international students. I had basically gone to SOAS in London and learned the Hangul alphabet. So I came
Yeah.
just literally kind of knowing the alphabet only, not really anything more than that. Are you still using Korean, exposed to Korean still
Yeah.
today?
Unfortunately, no. You know, how do I put it? It's something that I'm really sad about, to be quite frank. I haven't been able to use, you know, my Korean abilities. Man, this is 2024, probably in 8 to 10 years on a regular basis. So I moved to Singapore from Korea, and I had a great community of Korean friends there, and you know, we would go out and throw a few beers in us, and I was rambling like a wild man. Great Korean. But when I left Singapore, you know, my circle of Korean friends, it was much smaller, and I just didn't have the opportunity to use it quite often. And moving back here to Seattle, I just don't have that community of Korean friends here anymore, so I don't use it. With that said, it's very, very beneficial still, in a couple of ways. And one, you know, if I'm on calls with our sellers and things like that, occasionally you have some of the employees there on their team that are Korean, and talk to them and they're like, whoa, hold on, what's going on? This Weigelgian stock in Korean to me and things like that. But it's also given me an appreciation of the impact of speaking the language of somebody in a partner team, whether that's your partner team at work or a customer or a seller or anything like that in another country. Just learning how to say good morning, like
100%.
that's huge and builds a ton of rapport with those teams to show them that you have enough care for their culture and their language to take the time to learn something like that, even if you butcher it, right? That you're putting that forward.
No, definitely. And I think that's also something I admired in you, that you also have a very, I believe, very strong EQ. I don't know how, is there any effective quantitative measure of EQ? But I
I
do believe
try.
that they have it in spades. Because as I know that you've also been able to learn another language in the last few years. Is that right?
I don't know if I'd call it learn, but I've done some hard studying. When I left Australia, I ended up going to live in Thailand. And so I did study some Thai there, and I met my wife in Thailand. She managed to wear me down. Let's put it that way. She wore me down over a period of about a year. She's Thai.
Through
And so
speaking Thai to you continuously.
No, I wish she would have spoke more, to be honest. But her English is phenomenal. And but yeah, she kind of stole my heart, to be quite frank. And we ended up getting married and have two beautiful kids and another one on the way here just in the next couple of weeks.
I did not know that. Well, okay, fantastic.
We
Congratulations.
have two boys and a little girl is joining us here very shortly. So
Fantastic, fantastic.
yeah,
So
appreciate it.
what's the language that you are using as a family?
English. We're here in the US. And it's something that we've talked about a lot. And she prefers to speak English to them just where we're living. On my side, given my experience both living here and having Korean American friends and things of that nature and living overseas, I've seen the impact of potentially not teaching children the mother tongue in a really, really consistent way. I think that opens up a lot of opportunities for those children, not necessarily when they're children, but when they're adults, and impacts the experiences they can have in life, whether that's going abroad to study, whether that is going to work in another country, whether that's creating an appreciation for other cultures, right? It really just opens up a ton of opportunities in my mind to build a strong second language in those children,
For
if it's
sure.
possible.
For sure. No, I really truly believe that speaking another language is beneficial in so many ways. And I, obviously the UK is the one most famous within Europe for speaking least second languages, right? It's a nature perhaps of being an island. Without any adjacent land borders, but from a very young age, being able to speak German just immediately opened my mind to all these different cultures. So I think, yeah, fully agree with you on that. And in my day-to-day work, often for candidates that I'm putting forward for a position, we talk about their skills and then transferable skills, and then of course languages being a key part of that. And if people are applying overseas, sometimes they don't put their own language, right? So it's Koreans not putting Korean down as a language. And this is one of your core skills that you have to be able to speak more than one language is definitely a strong advantage.
Wholeheartedly agree with you. I just can't speak well enough about it.
So, in terms of your embarkation on a career into initially logistics, which was a totally new field for you, I remember that you seem to have a clear idea that building relationships and networking was a very important part of building a career, or not building a career directly, but creating opportunities to do what you want to do. And I
absolutely.
believe that your first job with expediters was created that way, if I'm not wrong.
So, crazy story. My whole career has been a little bit crazy, I'm going to be honest with you. But so essentially, as I was going through college and university and whatnot, I was working restaurant jobs, and I worked at a fine dining place in Seattle. And one of our customers, little did I know at the time, he was actually the founding CEO of Expeditors. And Expeditors is a Fortune 500 logistics company. It's one of the biggest logistics companies in the world. And his name was Peter Rose, and he used to come in, him and his wife used to come in all the time. And I just used to serve him, great people. I appreciated the values that he kind of represented and preached. And he was sitting at a bar one day, and he just looked really deep in thought. I was like, Peter, what's going on? He's like, I'm just thinking about where the company has come, went from $300,000 out of pulling everybody's pocket to a multi-billion dollar company with thousands of employees. And I was like, whoa. And as I learned more about Expeditors, and other senior leadership from the company would actually come in, I saw that the culture of Expeditors was lived, and I wanted to be a part of that culture. And so, I told Peter at the time, I said, I want to join Expeditors at some point. And they had a hiring freeze given the financial crisis. It's like, well, we're not hiring anybody. And it's like, okay, but this is what I really want to do. And when I went to Korea, he ended up sending my resume over to the district manager in Korea, which that's managing director for any other company. And I went to see the DM there in Korea when I got there, and he said, what can you do for my company? And I got at that time, I was like, you know what? I don't know. I'm this foreigner coming over into a very Korean work environment, right? I don't know the need you actually have for me as a foreigner coming in. And he was like, well, go teach English, you'll make more money. And I was like, okay, but you know what? As part of my internship, I'm going to need a intern, or sorry, as part of my MBA program, I'm going to need an internship. And do you mind if I reach out to you at that time to leverage your network? Because I understood, given my exposure to the Korean community, how important networking is in Korea. And it turns out throughout Asia, and now definitely in the US, but I wasn't as aware of that at that time. And so he said, yeah, no problem. You give me a call. And I think he expected me to never call him back again. And so time came for my internship, and I called him up. I said, hi, it's Chance Kennedy. I'm calling you back about the potential internship and maybe some connections you have. And he said, oh, just come do your internship here at Expeditor. And so that's how I ended up getting my foot in the door there, and totally through a network. And then each job I've gotten since then has been through my network. So.
See, and with Expeditors, that's you through, I think, your hard work and recognition, a promotion to regional office in Singapore.
I ended up going to do the management trainee program after I finished my MBA. I did a couple another internship after that at Hana Bank, actually. But I knew I wanted to work for Expeditors, so I went to Singapore to do the management trainee program and went through a number of roles there. Ended up getting promoted to the regional service provider manager for South Asia. That is covering 17 branches across 9 countries, and essentially, Expeditors doesn't own their own trucks or planes or boats or anything like that, and they work with service providers to throughout the world to actually execute the business that they run. And so my job was to manage the program, managing all those service providers across the region. Go ahead.
So I wanted to ask, relatively swift, you had a large responsibility. Was that something that you kind of, how did you feel when you took on that large amount of responsibility at that time?
That's a loaded question. I was humbled, to be very frank, because that was quite quick in my career overall. And I was appreciative of the opportunity that I've been given, and given the scale of the work that I had to do and being given that opportunity, I wanted to make sure I did a good job. Right? It wasn't so much of being nervous about it or whatnot. Kind of the way my career had progressed there, just from the management training program on up, I was thrown in where things were broke. Chance, go fix it, right? And so I kind of got used to that a little bit. And so my core concern there was just getting up to speed and doing a good job for the team overall, given the trust that I have been provided as somebody who's relatively new to the company, just a few years and moving into that level of a position. So.
And I'm always curious about international organizations, whether they are the, they're representative of their global headquarters. So in Expedited's case, an American company operating in Singapore, or a Singaporean company with American headquarters. And I'm always very curious about the culture of the company and how much of the national culture is imbued in the company culture. From my own personal experiences as well, that's something that's very interesting to me. And then especially in Korea, with regards to global companies operating here and then Korean companies overseas as well. How was that?
In my experience, and this is Expeditors, Amazon, and Walmart. In my experience, that company culture is lived throughout the different branches throughout the globe. However, within those specific locales, it's very much that country culture.
Very
So, in
much
terms of
localized.
Singapore, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And
Okay.
so, given you have your corporate headquarters and regional headquarters and things of that nature, you always have that influence coming from the higher levels of the business. But at that local level, it's typically most of those employees are going to be from that local country. And so, the company working environment in that sense at that local level typically represents that country.
Do you think that's a factor that's unique to those three companies' company cultures, or a factor of those particular industries, or the countries that that you're in, or is it an American company kind of thing to localize like that? What's your take on that?
I think there's probably a couple aspects of it. One is the size of the companies. So all three of these companies are not small in any way, shape, or form. And when you get to a size of the degree of Expeditors or Amazon or Walmart, you have to have that kind of, you have to be in touch with the top, right? I think if it was a smaller level company or a smaller company, that could be very different. If you're a company of 50 people opening branches throughout the world, that could be a very different experience. Now, in terms of the American side, and this is just my opinion, maybe not everybody will agree with it, but having lived overseas for, geez, 13 years, I think, between all the different countries, I've really come to see an American culture. And I couldn't recognize that. Initially, my first few years overseas, I could not recognize my own culture. But what I've come to see is that in many ways, Americans kind of, we live with blinders on, right? Because a lot of Americans haven't experienced actually living in different countries. Going to visit a country is one thing. When you spend 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years in a country, totally changes your perspective on things. And so in that sense, I do think there's a very strong American cultural aspect that is that kind of pushes our values in that sense, and so that could play a part of it as well.
No, I wish that I had had the experience of working for a British company overseas, because then I could really know what it's like to be British in a British company overseas. I haven't done that. I don't know which mega PLCs are out there listening, which maybe are thinking, hey, Gordon could be good for something regional global. Please get in touch. I'm just kidding. No, I mean, yeah, it's interesting because I think that sometimes it is very consciously done, and sometimes it's totally unconsciously done, intentional and not.
And the, if I can, the, just one thing that's important about that too, that I think people, and especially say, junior employees who are kind of developing their career and things of that nature and are thinking about working in different countries, when you are able to understand various cultures and the kind of working cultures of those countries, and you can translate for the business, that is really valuable, right? Because you are able to see two sides where the opposing sides typically would not be able to see what's going on. And you're able to kind of meet in the middle and be like, they're thinking this because of this particular cultural aspect. They're thinking this because of this particular cultural aspect, and you can, you know, tell each side what's really going on. So if anybody has the opportunity to develop those skills, highly recommend it.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, it's such a valuable skill to have that knowledge and awareness, because I continue through being exposed to cultures that I'm not that familiar with, right? You know, maybe they're my clients that I'm working with overseas, yeah. and you know, a decision is made or a you know, that there is some opinion given. And at first it strikes you at how on earth was it even possible to come to that conclusion? Like it's yeah. like beyond your initial scope of that could be a possible response. But then, you know, you like somebody helps to clarify the why, the rationale behind that, where they're coming from. And then it kind of all makes sense. And then it all seems yeah. very kind of obvious. Oh, that could have been an option. But it, from the get-go, without that knowledge, there can often be, like, you know, essentially that could be a conflict, or it could be a disagreement, or it could just be
yeah.
A non-successful conclusion because of misalignment. So it's
yep.
definitely, I think that we get sometimes a little bit deluded about how globalized, right? We can jump on a Zoom
yeah.
call with anybody in the world anytime. You told me that you have a lot of meetings with India and China. Obviously, time zones play a factor there. And we feel so connected. We feel so kind of like, you know, globalized. But at the same time, at the end of the day, you know, everyone is operating in that particular place, in that particular culture, in that kind of environment, and it is, there's still a lot of difference despite ability to jump on a plane and be there.
Yep.
It's still very different.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned about serving in the armed forces for 6 years. That is a very certain kind of organizational structure,
yeah.
a very certain kind of organizational culture. And I think increasingly there are people who have been very successful writing books and you know, producing content about some of the good aspects that they have experienced and then have been able to take to other organizations. How important do you feel that that experience has been for the rest of your career and on an ongoing basis in terms of forming your career path?
Yeah, couple of pieces. One was the leadership experience I gained. When I got out of the Army, I was a sergeant, and so as a non-commissioned officer, and I had my own squad, and that was my first, you know, real taste of leadership and whatnot. And
how many people in a squad?
It depends on the unit.
Okay.
I think in my squad, I only had like 4 people at that time. And so, but, you know, I was in aviation, and our day to day was fixing helicopters. Right. And each person in the squad had their own helicopter and whatnot assigned to them. And so, you know, I got my first taste of leadership there, but I was young. And in the Army, it's like, you do what I tell you to do and you have to do it. And that doesn't necessarily work in the outside world, right?
Usually
doesn't. But there were two core real lessons that I take with me to this day, to my career, and I still kind of tell the stories. And one is about decision making. And in the Army back in the day, and this was, you know, I was in the Army on September 11th. I got out in 2002. And back then we were doing a lot of training for nuclear, biological, chemical attacks and things of that nature. And you have like test equipment, right? So if you get attacked, you put on all your gear, your mask and all your clothing, and then you run some tests with some swabs back in the day, and they would tell you if everything's clear. But if you didn't have the equipment or you didn't have the swabs, you actually had to pick somebody as the NCO to expose themselves to the potential agent, which could kill them, to figure out if there was something there, right? And so there were various steps you would go through, and you would have them, say, break the seal on their mask and just real quick and put it back on. If they didn't, you know, go down or something, then you move on to the next step. Okay, break your mask and take a breath. If they didn't go down, right? And you work your way through that until they're not wearing any gear and you know it's safe. And so that really kind of ingrained in me the impact that making a decision can have on the lives of your employees, right, and your team. You literally have to pick somebody to tell them, you know what, I'm going to expose you and you may die. you're going to be the one, and that's on my shoulders. So that was a heavy load for somebody who was, you know, 20 plus. And, but I take that as an important to how I make decisions even nowadays. The second part of that, and this was kind of a big thing at Amazon, there's a cultural element at Amazon, one of the leadership principles called disagree and commit. And it doesn't matter necessarily what my position is on something. If a decision has been made, my job is to execute on that decision. And we can have a strong, healthy debate prior to a decision being made. But if my leadership has said, you know what, I appreciate where you're coming from, I hear you, but this is the direction I want to go. If it's 180 degrees opposite of what I wanted to do, my obligation is to follow through on my leader's decision, because my leader's decision is they're responsible to their leadership and vice versa. And my job is to execute on that. And so those are the core lessons I've really taken from that over time.
No, I mean, so clearly a big impact on you and you know, you've been obviously in now a leadership position for a number of years. What would you say, or how would you kind of define your leadership style?
I'm tough.
Okay.
I can be a little bit tough. So it's morphed, right? It's definitely morphed. It morphed from a sergeant in the army and to okay. someone who is who listens a lot more, right? Another thing that actually plays a role in it is it turns out I'm autistic. So I'm neurodiverse. I actually have OCD, ADHD, and I'm autistic. And I found out all this very late in life. And so in terms of being autistic, my communication styles aren't always picked up on. And I actually have to, let me phrase, they're not picked up on by people who are not autistic. So my facial expressions and things like that make it very different. The way I think through things on a very like minuscule level and connecting the dots. And when I'm thinking about something in that way and trying to communicate, my facial expressions just look really bad. And there were a few times I made people cry in my career, and I was just asking questions, right? I wasn't like putting anybody down or anything. I was just trying to understand what's going on. And when I found out I was autistic, that kind of put it all together. But in that sense, I really tried to be an active listener and active communicator with my teams and my employees, listen to what they say, discuss those, what they've said with them, make sure I understand, and then explain my rationale behind decisions I make. And the other part that is a really big part of my personal leadership philosophy is we all put our pants on the same way. When we get up in the morning, we put our pants on. My pants don't go on any different than any of the people who have ever worked for me. I'm no better than them in that sense. I'm in a different position, but my overall responsibility is to the business and making sure that they have a great work environment for themselves, because they spend more time at work than with their family in many occasions, right? And so I really try to keep that in mind as a leader of people, that they're people, and it's important to respect that.
Yeah, no, I think that's very well said, and I also appreciate, or I admire that you have a clear awareness of what your leadership style is. I know that also mentoring has also been a big part of yeah. your way of doing business. Is that something yeah. that you do both in and outside of the organization?
Yeah, very much. So I've had some good mentors, and my philosophy on mentorship is that you can't just be told. And, you know, you were with me in class where we were told to grab a mentor in class, and I told the professor, I'm not going to do it, right? You don't just grab a random person and ask them to be a mentor to you and hope everything goes well, right? It needs to be a good relationship between the mentor and the mentee that adds value across the board. And so I've had a select few mentors who have asked to be my mentor, and I've appreciated the impact that they've had on my life and the direction that they've given me. And so I've tried to pay that back. And especially say at Amazon, well, not even Amazon, Expeditors, a number of people that consider me a mentor, and we talk through their careers and help them develop and whatnot. And at Amazon, I was a military mentor, so where people could reach out to me for mentorship guidance, you know, other vets and things of that nature. I also took part in the mentorship program, the military mentorship program, as a mentee to understand how to navigate the Amazon culture, because it's very different, right? And coming into that culture, it was great to have a mentor that could guide me in the decisions I was making, the next career moves and things of that nature, and how decisions are made at Amazon. And then aside from that, you know, I have a number of people that reach out to me quite often through LinkedIn, and I'll set up coffee chats with them. Hey, what do you want to talk about? What do you think you could do on your career, right? They want to ask about product management and steps to get into product management and things of that nature. And, you know, I give guidance where I can in those areas. And I can't do it as much as I'd like, unfortunately. I just don't have the time, and, you know, with the number of people that reach out to you and whatnot. But I do it where I can, and I try to make it impactful for people. So.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. Is that you said about paying it back? You know, it's we can all benefit no matter where we are in our careers from having a mentor, and we can also benefit others by sharing experiences and being a good listener and you know, or sometimes just asking questions and letting that person mentally work through the challenge or question that they have at that particular time. I'm interested that you have been with very large organizations, and I even remember seeing just a graphic a couple of days ago, which I think when you take out the Chinese army, the Indian army, and the American armed forces, I think after the China Construction Bank, I think Walmart might be the largest employer in the world. I think it's 2 million
and we're one of the biggest
employees, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
But I wonder if you ever considered doing your own thing, setting up your own business, like rather than being a part of such a ginormous organization. Have you ever considered that? Was that ever a consideration for you?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about it. And in starting Mindful Muse, it's a side gig. It's not something that I expect will ever, you know, pay all the bills or anything like that. There's a few things I've learned. So when I was at Expeditors, I went from Singapore and regional service provider management there to Australia, where I took on leadership of the domestic transportation program. It's called Transcon. For Australia and New Zealand, along with that service provider role. And then from there, I actually went to Bangkok, where I was the district manager of Expeditors Thailand. So the managing director for Expeditors Thailand. I had, I think, 138 employees under me. And that gave me a really, really, and I own the full P&L, right? The entirety of the business. And that gave me a really deep understanding of what goes into running a business from top to bottom. So with my OCD, I actually came to find out I had OCD while I was in Australia because of a radio program, of all things. And OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, one of the things that happens is you ruminate on things, and you can go over and over and over and over on things. And in terms of my commitment to my employees, especially being autistic, you have a deep sense of ethics and doing the right thing. So all that combined with that many employees, it really, I learned, consumes me, and not in a healthy way, because I would ruminate on different things and things of that nature. And so when, you know, I left that role, I really, in the years that have gone through, I've kind of come to the understanding that for me to be really healthy mentally, it's not good for me to be in that position again with a ton of employees. I could have three or four or something like that and be okay. If I were to start my own business and it were to get big and things like that, it's not right for me at this point in my life to be that. You know, I did write a PR FAQ on a business that I thought could work very well, but I would need somebody else to run it. And I knew that going into it, that if we were to stand up the business, I could be on the backside developing the product and things of that nature, but I would need somebody else to take reins of the overall business, just so that I could be the best version of me overall. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, that's a decision that some may not take lightly, but I've really come to terms with it, and knowing what's right for me overall, and to be the best of just who I am in general. So
yeah. Sure. I don't think that's a bad thing in any sense, right? You have a conscious reason to be taking up a certain kind of work. I think that's good to be aware of that. You know, the thing that I dislike the most about running my business is that, you know, I know I'm not good at everything, but I have responsibility for everything. Right. You know, that's the hardest thing. So there's things that I know I'm not good at, but I've still got to do them because the responsibility comes down to me.
I think that's one of the hardest things, though, about like developing your career and moving into senior leadership roles, right? Is giving up that control. Like when you're not necessarily the best, you still got to hire people to do it, right? And you have to build like this level of trust within yourself to empower other people to do the things that you need to get done, right? And that's a journey in and of itself. So.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, Gary Vaynerchuk, put it quite well for me, in, you know that you can do it 100%, but you've got to get satisfied with the person being able to do X percent, because X percent good is better than percent, because you can't do everything.
Absolutely.
And I think that's like, yep, that it's to develop that kind of trust. Coming, like working on a daily basis, and the name of this pod, getting stuff done. How do you make sure on a daily, weekly, monthly basis that you get everything done that you need to get done? What are some of
Oh,
your
man.
personal strategies?
Yeah. The calendar is my friend.
Okay.
And especially with ADHD. So the thing with ADHD is like you may not get anything done, or you may get something done at a random time, or you may get this crazy hyper focus where you are just locked in and nothing is going to pull you away from that. So it's kind of a constant battle with that. So for me personally, I work better under pressure. If I have tons to do and very little time, that's when I'm going to perform my best. So I tend to not necessarily offload work that I could because it helps me actually focus in some ways, right? It keeps me on that. And so using the calendar in a very like methodical way in terms of I schedule in time where I'm going to do this specific work. It's not a meeting, but I'm going to do this work and it's going to get done at this time, right? That really has helped me a lot actually.
Okay.
Just to be more structured in that. And
Can
then,
I ask a question about that? When you say a certain task at a certain time, and then you start doing it, and you find yourself not able to get into it mentally, what do you then do?
It depends on how I'm not able to get into it. There are some times where I know I just need to give up, and I accept that, right? Because it's going to be a worse outcome if I try to pressure it and I keep getting distracted and pulled off into other things, then I'm going to get nothing done, right? So in that sense, if I've got time booked out on my calendar, like, okay, I've got 2 hours, I'm going to work on this PRD, and I start, and then my mind is just like phew, phew, off to this thing, off to that thing. It depends on what it's going to. If it's just totally random stuff or something, maybe I'll go through, I'll clear out my emails, take care of like administrative stuff that's got to be done, doesn't require a lot of brain power, and I can just tackle it, right? If my brain is going off to something that like is a big challenge and it's just what my mind is focused on that day, okay, maybe I move around my calendar a little bit, but I'll literally like take the events from my calendar and move it around, right? To reposition that, so I know I've worked on it and things of that nature. So I gotta kind of I check in with myself, right? How am I doing today? Where am I at? What is it gonna be? There was some stuff, say like last Friday, really having a hard time just drilling into something, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna work on it on Sunday, and I jumped in on Sunday and was like, boom, 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 just done, you know? So yeah, I just check in with myself a lot in that sense.
And you mentioned earlier on about your family, which is also soon to get even larger. How do you balance those kind of things?
Luckily, I have an amazing wife. She's really supportive. She's a stay-at-home mom. She was a professional beforehand, and when we had the children, we made a tough decision of what would be best for our kids overall and how we think we should raise them and the cost of childcare and things like that here in the United States. And so she knows that I'm the breadwinner of the family and I'm the only one that's paying the bills in that sense. And so she's very supportive of the time it takes. The work that I do, I can have really long days. So some days I'm going from like 7:30 a.m. to 9:30. My last call tonight is at 9 p.m. And so there are some long days, and we talk about it with each other and kind of schedule our things around that. Luckily, with my role here at Walmart, we are mostly remote and we go into the office one day a week. So that makes things a little bit easier. If she has an appointment or something, I can kind of fill in. I can still do my work while the kids are doing whatever they're doing. But yeah, we kind of manage it that way. And, she takes care of me She makes sure I'm provided for. I have, my food when I need it. If I'm running close to lunch and I've got like 15 minutes, she'll hook me up. Dinner is ready for me when it's dinner time if I got some late calls and things like that. So I'm just really lucky.
And working from home, you said that is that your constant one day in the office per week, 4 days working from home?
And it changes occasionally. Like this week we'll have an on-site there at the office, and so I'll be in the office 3 days this week. But most of the month that's the schedule. So
And what's your preference on that? Is that do you have a choice on that? Is that the structure that you have chosen and works best for you?
yeah, no, this is kind of company mandated, that structure. We can go into the office more if we like. I do live about 40 minutes away from the office, so I got to take that commute into consideration when I'm doing everything, right? That time that it takes me to drive there and back, I can actually be getting more work done, which is beneficial, right? Like that's quality time for me. But with that said, there are definite benefits as well to being in the office and seeing your teammates and just getting together and connecting on things that are random. Whiteboarding sessions, it's beneficial to have whiteboarding sessions from time to time. I've had times in the office in the past month where our senior engineers come to us and they're like, "Hey, I need to talk about something. Can you just show me something?" And we're right here. I can just go draw it out for them, give them a good understanding and whatnot. So there's benefits all the way around, I think. It's each organization has to find their balance, and I can't say which way is right in general. I think it's going to depend on the organization and the people. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to come back from leadership background to transferable skills. I think that you've demonstrated that you are very reflective, and I think you are very conscious of the things which have helped you along the way and to progress in your career, and now obviously in a leadership position as well. What do you think are some of the most important transferable skills that are needed in today's working environment?
Yeah, so let me be clear on one thing. Here at Walmart, I'm an individual contributor.
Okay.
And so we do have many, many stakeholder teams and partner teams that we work with. And that kind of influencing is very, very important from a leadership perspective. So in terms of transferable skills, communication is transferable anywhere. And active listening and active communication is critical, I would say, to anybody's career. You need to be able to ensure that you're not misinterpreting things. And especially as somebody who's autistic, I can take things very different than other people might be communicating it. And people may take things that I'm saying differently than what I'm communicating it with. So building those skills and repeating back what people are saying so they understand that you're hearing them and that you are listening to what they say is it's one of the most important skills you can have. Humbleness, right? You are replaceable, and I hate to say that, but the term I like to use is if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, the company's going to keep on going, right? And you need to be humble about that and understand that there's always somebody better, but you could be really, really good at what you do, and you can be grateful for that role that you're doing. And no matter the role you go into, and no matter the company, that's a good thing to have and to hold. Data is critical.
Okay.
Not all companies have the data infrastructure set up in a way that makes it usable. But if you know how to run SQL queries, typically if you're going to a bigger organization, there's going to be a data framework set up where you can pull data to make business decisions wisely. So.
Yeah, I mean, you say data, and initially you think, hey, that's not a transferable skill, but you're absolutely right in the sense that every organization has data, every organization needs data, every organization can make a competitive advantage by the better utilization of that data, which ties in very nicely to my guest last week, Dr. Eric Kim from Data Crunch Global, whose company does exactly that thing. And he said that actually that most organizations are not making good use of their data, right? So even the largest or the most profitable still have quite significant deficit in the way that they manage and analyze or extract the value out of that data. Yep. So thank you so much for highlighting those transferable skills. I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, even within the same cultural context, that those things are necessary, let alone putting in a multicultural aspect to it as well. I think on that note, you know, like you said, everyone puts their pants on the same way in the morning. I think that's a good way of summarizing the humility aspect that you also highlighted. So Chance, thanks so much for being my guest today and sharing your insights and experiences. Thank you.
My pleasure. Appreciate it, man.
And thank you to everybody. It's been another great episode, and looking forward to seeing you and meeting you again on the next episode of the Get Stuff Done podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Get Stuff Done podcast. If you would like to be a guest in the future, please do reach out. Or if you would like to recommend someone, that would be awesome as well. Make sure you keep listening, as we will be bringing you fresh insights every week, because getting stuff done is something everyone needs.